There are 39 milahot which constitute forms of work forbidden on the Sabbath. It's the why behind the way we do the things we do. Join Rabbi Moshe Schnurb now for Hilchos Shabbos, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is Soul to Soul. On your radio, Erev Shabbos Kodesh, Parshas Bereishis, Tov Shin Pei Vov, Boruch Shechiyonu V'Kiyamonu V'Yigiyonu Lazman Hazeh. We once again zeiche to begin a new cycle of learning the Torah HaKadoshah, of going through week by week all the parshas of the year, and trying with the help of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, only with the help of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to try to learn a little bit, to try a little to understand what HaKadosh Baruch Hu's message is, how is it relevant to us, what can we do based on the ma'isim of our great forefathers of the Jewish nation, of all that the Torah describes. How is this real? How is it relevant? What difference does it make in our lives? What clarity can we get from it? What understanding can we get from it? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us the zchus, Baruch Hashem, for another year. We've been doing it here for now a few years. I hope that Baruch Hashem will be zecha this year to be able to learn some new things, learn some different things, bring out some more points and some more lessons, some more great chidusha maybe, some things that we can actually take with us into our own lives. What a special privilege it is. Now, Mamish, I cannot tell you how blessed I am to be able to have this time that we spend every Friday afternoon together to be able to learn these things. As always, Baruch Hashem, the program is brought to you as is chus for refuah shleima, for many people that needs such a refuah shleima, such as Gershon HaKohen ben Friedel, Avram Yankov ben Stern Asara, Elkanah ben Orit, Eli Getzel ben Disheva, Yosef Yitzchak ben Bela, Lana Tevya bas Rina, Binyamina bas Yenta, Akava bas Libamina, Esther Yehudis Chaya bas Rut Ora, Besich Shor Chole Yisrael, amongst all those who Baruch Hashem are in need of Hashem's help, where Hashem has put them in a situation where they're having difficulty, whatever area it might be. Nataka, this year, New Year, we had a Gezar Din, we had Rosh Hashanah, we had Yom Kippur, we had Eishan Rabbah, Bez Hashem. This year, they should have been written and inscribed and sealed for a year of bracha, for a year of gezunt, for a year of parnasa, for a year of all the things that of course, we need. So, of course, where are we going to start the Torah from? The very, very beginning. Bereishis bara Elokim. In the beginning of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's creation. So, Rabbi Yehuda Leib Eiger was actually the grandson of Rabbi Akiva Eiger, and the son of Rav Shlomo Eiger was kind of drawn a little bit to Hasidus, which is in contrast to the way in which he was raised. And this, of course, was a time in which Hasidim and Misnagdim, those in opposition to Hasidus, were, to say the least, not on sort of the most amicable terms. Rav Leibler went to Rav Menachem Mendelzal of Kotsk, the famous Kotsk Rebbe. Kotsk was, of course, was we know, a Hasidus devoted to strict adherence to really unvarying and unvarnished kind of truth. The Rebbe did not have a large following because he had no tolerance for anything that was less than the truth. He didn't build up his Hasidim. Rather, he pointed out their flaws so that they could change and better themselves. He lived by the demands of din, strict justice, never satisfied until he achieved total sort of perfection. Obviously, his Hasidus did not sort of cater to, nor was it actually meant for, the average Jew. Suffice it to say that no love was lost on the sort of the part of Shlomo Eiger towards Hasidus in general, and Katz in particular. The first time Rav Shlomo. Rav Shlomo visited Kotsk in an attempt to sort of bring his son back home. So he succeeded in convincing Rav Leibish to return for a short while. Once he was home, his father asked what he had learnt during his stay in Kotsk. Indeed, what could such a brilliant mind, a scion of such illustrious Talmid Chachamim, learn in Kotsk? And he replied that he had learnt three things in Kotsk. We're going to take a 2-minute break and we'll come back and share those three things that he felt he had learned in Kotsk. This is 101.9 Chai FM, the program of Soul to Soul. We'll be back in a moment.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
101.9 Chai FM, this is Soul to Soul. Back on your radio, Erev Shabbos Kodesh, Parshas Bereishis Tov Shin Pei Vov, as we begin a new cycle. So, Rav Shlomo Eger asked his son, what exactly did you learn in your time in Kotsk? So he answered, Rav said that he had learned three things in Kotsk. First of all, a human is a human, and an angel is an angel. They represent two completely different entities. Number two, if a human being so desires, he can actually achieve greater distinction than an angel. Being mortal does not preclude his ability to achieve greatness. And thirdly, the Torah's opening pasuk, Bereishis Bara Elokim, teaches us that Hashem created the beginning. From that point on, it's in the hands of man. Now, veritably, the third teaching kind of dovetails on the two preceding ones. A human being whose function is to endeavor and to produce in this world is, of course, different from the angel, whose function is to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the celestial sphere. When a person applies himself, right, with the mamish, with the reishis, with the beginning point bestowed upon him by HaKadosh Baruch Hu as his starting point, so of course he can ascend to such heights that even supersedes that of a malach, of an angel. So now let's proceed to the closing parsha of Sefer Vayikra. Im b'chukosai teilecho. If you follow my chukim, yes, mitzvosai tishmeru, and you guard my chukim, v'asisa mesam. Right? You follow my decrees and observe my commandments and perform them. So Chazal, in the Medrash there, expound on the words v'asisa mesam, on which they sort of posit that the second word can be read, not as a va'asisem oisam, you shall do them, but va'asisem atem. Right? Of course, there's no vav in the Torah in the word oisam. So therefore, va'asisem atem, you created yourselves. And this, of course, supports the notion that one must act upon that rachis, whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu, whatever deck of cards HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given you, Hashem began the process. And we have to continue by adding, embellishing, and strengthening the original. Man needs to rise to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu to become the loftiest creature in his service. This, of course, explains, right? Rav Shlomo Brevda says, kind of hinted to by the words Na'ase Adam, let us make man. Na'ase in the plural, let us. The simple explanation is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke with all of the ministering angels, right? A move which demonstrates Hashem's humility to teach us that regardless of one's greatness, he should nonetheless consult with subordinates. But now we can interpret Nase and let us, HaKadosh Baruch Hu and man, Hashem, look sort of expectantly at man to see whether he will perfect himself to become the man that HaKadosh Baruch Hu meant him to be. Man is Hashem's creation, yet at the same time, he is his own creator. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plan for creation is put on hold, or even sometimes sabotaged by man when he fails to sort of perfect himself to become the actual man that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants him to be. Right? And it's obligatory, it's incumbent upon all of us to participate in the Nase Adam, right? And continue Hashem's work by continually perfecting ourselves. Right? We know, Baruch Hashem, some people are born into a life of Kedusha, of spiritual holiness. Others, right, invoke it upon themselves. Right? We know the Nazir, like, for example. The Nazir takes a vow upon himself to live a different lifestyle than any of his peers. His vow demands that he, A, not drink wine and any other grape derivatives. He must grow his hair, and he may not defile himself to a dead body. Becoming a Nazir is an extraordinary undertaking, an achievement that's not meant for all people, right? Maintaining this achievement is very difficult. All too often, we obtain like a spiritual level, a spiritual achievement, only to allow it to kind of slip through our fingers because we lack the strength, the fortitude, and the resolution to actually hold on in order to keep fighting for what we have accomplished. In addressing the Nazir's lofty spiritual level, so the Amnon Ezra explains why the Nazir's level of Kedusha, in a sense, is even greater than that of a Kohen, of a common Kohen. Why? A common Kohen may, and actually sometimes must, define himself to his seven closest relatives, while a Nazir may not. A Kohen receives his holy status from his ancestors. He did nothing on his own to earn this high position, right? Other than being born into a Kohen's family. Since he draws his spirituality from his family, it makes sense that the laws prohibiting him from making himself tameh to the corpse of another Jew, so that should be suspended with regards to his family. They are the source of his sanctity. Thus, family overrides his status of priestly holiness. The Nazir, however, is not born into the position, right? He attains it through his own personal initiative, which Hashem sanctions. His Kedusha has no ties to family. With regard to his holiness, all Jews are the same. The Kohen Gadol is different from the Kohen, from the normal Hedyut, as he is not allowed. A Kohen Gadol, the high priest, is not allowed to defile himself, even to his relatives. Why? His position is not bestowed upon him by birth, but rather by achievement. Right? Without his self-developed sort of importance that he himself has brought upon himself, he would be a normal Kohen. His position is not sort of family connected. It's because of his own merit, right? And as in all things, however, one has to work hard to maintain what he has nurtured. Otherwise, the fleeting moments of success will have little to no effect on the sort of the trajectory of his entire life. Right? A marked difference exists between success and greatness. A great person is able to overcome, challenge time and time again to rise up and continue his search. The mark of true greatness is the ability to overcome failure and continue on until one achieves his goals. A successful person might reach a certain level and then stop because he has too many sort of obstacles to overcome. He is successful because he has gone higher than anybody else, but he's not great. And accordingly, a man is constantly involved in his own fulfillment of Naseh Adam. Every challenge, every adversary, every failure that one overcomes brings them closer to achieving Naseh Adam. Right? And in a letter to a student who had sort of become discouraged by his repeated failure to master the sort of more analytic area of learning, right? So Rav Yitzchak Kuttner writes, a failure many of us experience is that we focus on the high achievements of great people, while we tend to ignore the inner struggles that had previously sort of stormed within them. These individuals did not just leap in their first endeavor to overwhelming success. Greatness cannot be achieved without failure. Failure tempers one's resolve and strengthens his footing so that he can climb firmer and higher. Naseh Adam, together with the help of Hashem, with Siyata Deshmaya, we can make man. This is 101.9 Chai FM. The program is Soul to Soul. We'll be back in a moment with much, much more.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
101.9 Chai FM. This is Soul to Soul. Back on your radio. Erev Shabbos Kodesh, Parshas Bereishis, Tov Shin Pei Vav. As we prepare for another amazing, amazing Shabbos. So, of course, one of the main items discussed in this week's parsha, which of course has ramifications that are affecting us every moment of our lives and every moment of the life of every single person who have lived on this earth, was of course the sin that was committed by Adam and Chava when they were in Gan Eden. And the Gemara in Masechta Sanhedrin on Daf Lamed Ches on base 38b brings. But Amar Rav Yehuda says in the name of Rav, Adam Harishon Min Hoya. Adam Harishon was actually a heretic. So we call apikolus. Why? Shneimar it says, Vayikra Hashem Elokim El Adam. Hashem called out to Adam. Vayoyim Eloi. It says, Ayeka, which means, on Natalibcha, where has your heart gone? Where's your devotion? Where's your connection to me gone away? And we need to understand where was there an act of heresy, an act of denying God's presence in the chait of the Eitz Hadas, that he's actually considered to be a heretic. So perhaps we can explain that the Gemara elsewhere in Sanhedrin on page Nuntes on 59b, says there that Rabbi Yehuda ben Tema used to say, Adam Arishan was sitting and reclining in Gan Eden, and the angels of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the ministering angels, were sort of making a braai place, were roasting meat for him, and they gave him fine wine. And the nachash, primordial snake, looked at him, hit this by a nachash, and he saw the tremendous honor and respect that Adam Harishon was being given, and he became jealous of Adam Harishon. In other words, the meat and the wine which Adam Harishon had, so of course these were not prepared, but there was a need to actually roast the meat before they could eat them. And therefore, the wine also, wine had to be prepared, it had to be made. But by the Eitz Hadas, right? Or at least according to the opinion, that the Eitz Hadas, let's say, was wheat. So the Toras Chaim, the commentaries there in the Gemara Sanhedrin, asks, but on wheat itself, right? So you can't say, or at least the wheat that we understand is wheat. You can't say, ki toyifo eitz l'machol. This looks so yummy. This looks so wonderful to eat. V'chisabu l'naim, it's so appealing to the eyes, huh? A stalk of wheat, it tastes so yummy, looks so beautiful, huh? And therefore, the Toras Chaim goes on to explain that the intention is not that there were stalks of wheat growing there. That certainly would not have appealed to Chava to such an extent. But the Kavana was that it was already baked, so to speak, into a beautiful, beautiful, fresh-looking loaf of bread, right? Which the earth sort of produced. Right? The trees were producing sort of eclairs and cinnamon buns and beautiful bread, right? As it would be, as you'd find today in the finest bakeries. So therefore, we can explain that the test of Adam Arishan was that the ministering angels, the Malchei Asharis, were presenting to him a meat that required work, required roasting, it required hard labor. And wine that needed to, wine is a process. You have to take the grapes and squeeze them. It needs to be refined. Get rid of all the dregs and stuff. And in contradistinction to that, the snake was sort of enticing him to eat something that was there, ready to eat straight away. And without any need for any sort of action at all, it's there. And that was the sort of the way the Nachash convinced and seduced Adam HaRishon to do the Chet. Well, why do you have to work hard to get your food? Roasting, stand over a hot fire for hours? Don't, just pluck it off the tree. The only problem is that Adam HaRishon didn't know that the roasting of the meat and the straining of the wine was, of course, for his own benefit. Because there's a Gemara in Chulin on page 59a, which says that Shmuel, right, that he used a fire to check meat, that he was worried that it might have been bitten by a snake. So he needed light, needed a fire to investigate it, to inspect it. And these pieces fell off because of the poison of the snake that was in it. Right? It was terrible. It was completely infiltrated. So to Chazal say in the Gemara Sukkah, that straining the wine saves a person from the possibility that, God forbid, a snake actually sort of injected its poison into the wine. The wine was uncovered. In other words, the snake wanted to poison, to sort of inject his poison into the food of the human being in order that he should be able to die, and then the snake would be able to marry his wife, Chava. But when he saw that, in fact, it was the angels who were roasting for the man the meat and busy straining his wine, and if so, there was absolutely no possibility that he should be able to inject his poison into man's food, because obviously the fire and the straining would get rid of it. To get rid of the poison, therefore he decided to try to seduce man in a different way, rather to eat from the Eitz Hadas, and in that way, or perhaps, right, he'll be able to actualize his evil plan that Adam would die and he'd be able to marry Chava. That was the kfira. That was the heresy of Adam Rishon, that he didn't believe that every command of HaKadosh Baruch Hu not to eat from the Eitz Hadas was only for his own benefit. And therefore, he was punished. By the sweat of your brow will you eat meat. In other words, corresponding to the fact that other Mauritian chose to rather eat from the Eitz Hadas because it looked so beautiful, it looked so appealing and so wonderful to him. Right? Everything was ready to eat. And there was no work that had to be done to prepare it. For that he was punished, that from now on he would have to work and put in intense labor for any food that he wanted to plant or to plow, or he'd have to work very, very hard until he's actually able to put some food in his mouth. Rabbi Yehuda Pasya, in his Sefer, Minchas Yehuda, asks a question. How could it be that the Nochash even got into Gan Eden without permission? HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't bring into Gan Eden anyone. The only person HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought into Gan Eden was Adam himself. And you can't say that he managed to get there when Adam was busy assigning names to all the animals, right, which was before HaKadosh Baruch Hu put Adam to sleep and took his rib and created Chava, and he just remained there at all. That can't be, because the commandments not to eat from the Eitz Hadas came even before the Adam Rishon gave names to all the animal, to the old names of the animals. And from the words of a Nachash that he said to Chava, because Yodea Lekim, Hashem knows that when you eat from it, you're going to become like God. So it seems clear that the Nachash actually was standing there and he heard what Hashem commanded Adam Rishon. How did he get there? And he answers as follows. When he says, it seems according to me, that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded to Adam, and he told me, I'm putting you in Gan Eden, la'avda, to work it with it, u'l'shamra, and to protect it. So the man actually summoned the snake to sort of be in front of him, to be his aide-de-camp, to serve him, and to help him in taking care of this beautiful garden. And he dafka chose the snake more than any other animal because he knew, the snake amongst all the other creatures, knew how to speak like a human being, right? And he was much cleverer and much craftier even than the fox, and he was much stronger even than the lion, as the Gemara says in Sanhedrin on 59b, right? And as it says, Chaval, it's such a shame, al shamash godlan, such a great servant that was destroyed. The Nachash was all capable. He really could have helped Adam, and that's why Adam summoned him to be there. And that's why he had permission to actually come in at the stand and serve before Adam Orishan. And when Chava was created, so the Nachash went to Chava in order to serve her also, because that was his job. And when she kind of sidled over to the Eitz Hadas, so he was able to seduce her to in fact eat from that Eitz Hadas. That's as far as he says. So therefore it becomes actually clear that the fact that the Nachash was actually present inside Gan Eden was with the acquiescence, with the full knowledge of Adam Rishon. And he brought him in order to serve him. And that's why the Nachash actually heard the command of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that they should not eat from the Eitz Hadas. And therefore, it's difficult to understand. If the Nachash came into Gan Eden in order to serve Adam HaRishon, so you have to ask, but we just were many mentioned that Adam HaRishon, Noah said, that Adam HaRishon had malachim that were busy roasting meat for him and busy straining wine for him. Why did he have a purpose in asking for a snake also to serve him? So it's true that Adam HaRishon had these angels that were busy serving him, but that wasn't enough for him. He actually wanted more than that. He also wanted not only the angels, he also wanted the servant to help him. And from this, the Nachash was able to discern that Adam HaRishon was someone who was looking always for the most convenient, for the easiest way out to have a good life without too much effort. Right? He didn't want just want malachim. He also wanted Nachash to be there to help him also. And therefore he understood that if he'd be able to seduce them to eat from the Eitz Hadas, which had all these beautiful, prepared, ready-to-eat food, Adam would take the choice of taking from that rather than the wine and the meat and all the other food which a person has to put effort into and prepare and to ready them before he would eat them. Right? And that was the fear that he understood that Adam HaRishon, unfortunately, was easily susceptible because he was looking for these easy ways out. You know, it's interesting. There was a man called a hidden tzaddik. His name was Rav Chaim Sivani, and he was actually known as the tzaddik from Yahud, and he was known as the chief of the 36 hidden tzaddikim. So one time he had other people that were there, and they began to speak about the greatness of Rav Levi Yitzchak from Badichav, the Kedushas Levi, that if you mention his name and the name of his mother, so that actually causes a person that is a tremendous, at that time there'd be a tremendous, tremendous sort of favorable press, a good sort of vibes in Shemayim for the Jewish nation. So Rav Chaim Sinovi replied to that and says, even if you just mention the city by Ditchev, even that alone is already enough to arouse tremendous merit for the Jewish nation. And he brought a proof for that from a Mishnah in Meseches Tamid, chapter 3, Mishnah 2. In Yuma, it's brought very, very similar Mishnah. It says there that when Heyer Pnei Kol HaMizrach, when the entire eastern sky lit up, Ad Shebu Chevron, all the way until Chevron. And then those who were sort of standing around him asked, well, I understand, if the whole eastern sky lit up until it's actually visible in Chevron, that he had to ask that question, and then they would answer, yes, it is. And the reason for that is, says the Gemara in the Yerushalmi, in order to mention the Zechus Oves, right, to mention our great forefathers, just to mention the city of Chevron is already something that's a tremendous merit for the Jewish nation. And he said that in Shemayim, there's a special, special chamber of merit, that's called Rav Levi Yitzchak from Berdichev. Now, we know that from the very time of Moshe Rabbeinu, right, there never came down to this world a neshama of such a high level and so pure, right, that the mamish was so elevated and so pure that everything that it did in this world was simply to defend and advocate for the Jewish nation. Every day and every night was trying to find beneficial ways to look at everything the Jewish nation was doing, both generally and for each person on Yom Tov and on Shabbos, on Rosh Hashanah before Tekiyas Shofar, even on Yom Kippur before Kol Nidre and before Ne'ilah, only looking to find good things to say about people and about the Jewish nation at all. And then there are tens and hundreds of stories about him. Rav Levi Yitzchak was conversed with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, like someone who talks with another person. And he would always argue for the benefit of the Jewish nation, and prove their righteousness before Hashem with straightforward, simple words, with clear proofs, like a defense attorney would stand in front of the judge, right? And even today, we say if Rabbi Levi Yitzchak was alive in our generation, he would have said whatever it is. I mention this only because today, the 25th of Tishrei, is actually the Yahrzeit of Levi Yitzchak of Ben Berdichev. And again, his name is Rav Levi Yitzchak Berdichev Ben Sarah Sasha. And as we just said, his tremendous koyach, his tremendous power, were to find good things to say, to turn, God forbid, curses into blessings. And we can be sure that he will always be standing in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's holy throne to arouse divine mercy on the entire Jewish nation and to turn whatever, God forbid, decrees or curses against us that may have happened in the previous year, the previous week, into tremendous bracha. And to fill HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Samchinu, Hashem should give us joy this year, in direct proportion to the amount we've suffered over the last couple of years, Hashem should make this year a year full of joy, happiness, and simcha for one and all. This is 101.9 Chai FM, the program is Soul for Soul. We'll be back in a moment with our Hilchos Shabbos slot.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
101.9 Chai FM, this is Soul to Soul, back on your radio. Erev Shabbos Kodesh Parshas, Bereishis, Tov, Shin, Pei, Vav, as Baruch Hashem was zeichet to begin a new cycle of learning the Torah, and of course to be able to continue our learning of Hilchos Shabbos together. But before, as we always do at this time, to just go through the important times for this coming Shabbos. Bereishis. So first of all, this afternoon, the earliest time for lighting Shabbos Licht is at 4:56. 4:56 is already more than 2 hours from now. Still plenty of time to get a really good start to this cycle of the Torah, to maybe, you know, get those lights on a little bit earlier, and you can sit down ready with a chumash or with some commentaries on the parsha. The parsha's Bereishis is the most amazing parsha. You could probably spend an entire year learning it and not exhaust all the material, all the insights, all the concepts that are there. But let's try. Let's make it a precedent, and let's try to then follow that precedent of getting Shabbos ready earlier. Now we're going into summer. the days are getting longer. It's another couple of weeks, will be at our 6:15 sort of normal time. And it's great to be able to start the Shabbos a bit earlier. If you're not able to do that at 4:56, in any time, as soon as you're ready, let's get the candles on, let's get Shabbos and the atmosphere and the ambiance and the beauty of Shabbos going in our homes. If for whatever reason you're delayed, whatever it is, the latest time for benching licht this week is at 5:57, 3 minutes before 6 is the latest time, and that really is, as we always say, the latest time. Yes, it's true that the Shia sunset is only at 6:15, but that is only emergency time, only for a person that, God forbid, if you wouldn't have that time, might actually break Shabbos. So they're allowed to continue to do things during that time. As far as we are concerned, 5:57 is the absolute deadline for the beginning of Shabbos. So I said the sunset is then 6:15, which means if you want to daven Ma'ariv and make sure you're saying Kriyat Shema after night, so you don't have to repeat, all you have to do is wait until 6:33. 6:33 is already certainly night, and you can daven Ma'ariv. As I say, most shuls will certainly only reach Ma'ariv after that time, and you can daven Ma'ariv and come home and have another beautiful Friday night with your family. We're out of the sukkah, you could have it in the house. Have friends, have family, have you just your family, and just talk about how you experienced the recent Yom Tov, the impressions they made. What are you taking with you? What are you sort of packing up in your kit bag? Something you learned, something you heard, something you saw, something, an impression you had that's going to stay with you and color your life, please God, for the coming year. It's very, very important. We don't just leave the inspiration behind and just go back to our normal lives, but actually take something with and make something real, some real changes in our life. Tomorrow, of course, is Parshas Bereishis, first Parsha of the Torah. So much there, the creation of the world, the sin of Adam and Chava, and the first 10 generations until Noach. And of course, there's a special Haftorah that we read for Parshas Bereishis, designated Haftorah for Bereishis. And then, of course, this week is also Shabbos Mevorachim. We're getting to the end of Tishrei, about to start the month of Maheshvan, where Shchodesh, please God, will be on Wednesday and Thursday of the coming week. So we'll say what Shchodesh mentioned. And, of course, your shul, whatever they normally do in honor of Shabbos Mevorachim, be it a special chant or a special shir, whatever it is, get involved. One of the main things we take with us from the Yom Narim, from the Rosh Hashanah, Kippur, and Sukkot, is to be part of the community, to be involved, to get involved, do things, feel the pain, feel the joy, be involved in the activities of a community. So Rosh Chodesh, as I said, is Wednesday, and Thursday. We're still not saying Tachanun until after Rosh Chodesh, which means that in the afternoon we won't say Tzidkaska Tzedek either. And Shabbos Kodesh is definitely getting longer. The Shabbos Kodesh ends tomorrow night at 6:48, 12 minutes before 7. And then we actually go into a normal, full 6-day week, which we haven't had in like over a month. We are still involved in the learning of Hilchos Shabbos, and we're going to start a little section dealing with, of course, the concept of electricity and electrical appliances, turning on lights and appliances, etc., etc. So it is prohibited by Torah law to turn on an electric light globe or activate an electric heating element, because when the globe is turned on or a heating element is actually activated, so the filament is kind of incandesces, right? And we'll see later on regarding fluorescent glows, and this is a form of havara, of lighting a fire, which was prohibited by the Torah. While it's true that in the past, people did not generally produce heat or light by heating metal, we nevertheless find that heating metal for any purpose was prohibited by Torah law. In fact, the Rambam writes that if one heats metal with the intention of sort of tempering it afterwards by plunging it into cold water, he actually transgresses the Torah prohibition of mavir, of lighting a fire. So clearly then, heating metal is forbidden by Torah law if it accomplishes some purpose. And extinguishing a light globe or a heating element is only rabbinically prohibited. Why? It's different from a normal act of mechabe, of extinguishing a fire, because there the purpose is to create a charcoal, as we explained above, and therefore, since you're not intending to create charcoal, it's only downgraded to a rabbinic a prohibition. In contrast, turning off an electrical appliance creates absolutely nothing, so its prohibition is also only a rabbinic prohibition. Further, the Torah forbids performing prohibited melachos by means of electrical appliances. Therefore, activating an electric flour mill on Shabbos constitutes a violation of teichin, of grinding. Operating an electric mixer on Shabbos violates losh, the issur of kneading, and so forth, for all of the melachos. Although the person is not kind of manually grinding or kneading, since he presses the button or flips the switch to turn the appliance on, all melachos performed by the appliance are viewed as melachos performed by him himself, and therefore he is chayiv. Right? Just as one may not turn on an electrical appliance by pressing a button, so too one may not activate something by a sort of remote control, even though there is no direct contact between sort of the finger pressing a button on the remote control and the actual appliance, since this is the normal way to turn on such appliances, so it is forbidden, just as manual activation would be forbidden. It doesn't make any difference that you didn't actually do it, but you did it remotely. It's still going to be forbidden. Okay, we're going to come back with some closing comments in a moment. This is 101.9 Chai FM, and the program is Soul to Soul, and this is the greatest Jewish radio station in all of Africa.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
101.9 Chai FM, this is Soul to Soul, back on the radio as we spend last few minutes together before running off to complete all of our own Shabbos preparations. And again, as always, it's such a thank you to the staff here, to Craig, to the producers, to all those who actually make this show happen. So one may not activate any electrical appliances and or devices, such as telephones, microphones, alarms, doorbells, fans, air conditioners, and computers on Shabbos, even if these appliances do not contain an incandescent filament or an heating element and do not perform any of the 39 melachos, it is still forbidden to use them on Shabbos. Right? Nachmanim disagree, however, whether the prohibition is by Torah law or rabbinic law. Some maintain that using any electrical appliance violates the Torah prohibition of mavir, of lighting a fire. They maintain that electricity has the same status as fire, since like fire, it has energy and power that can be harnessed. But some rabbanim favor this position, arguing that the key aspect of fire is not its appearance, but rather its power to illuminate, to heat, and to provide power. Indeed, the Chachamim state that there are different types of fire, says the Gemara in Yuma, including some that do not burn and destroy. One example of this is the fire that Moshe saw at the burning bush. Right? Rav Uziel agrees with this approach, adding that turning on electricity is also prohibited as a form of metaken mana, fixing something, since activating an electrical appliance renders it useful. And Chaznish says that also, maintains that turning on an electrical appliance is prohibited on account of a boine, of building, because completing a circuit creates a sort of a kli, right? When electricity flows through a device, an electrical wire within comes to life and activates this device. Thus, one who completes a circuit builds an implement, and one who breaks a circuit actually demolishes it. There's lots much more to say about this, but our time is just about up. Therefore, I'm just going to take the opportunity to thank every one of you for joining us. Hope you learned something and gained some inspiration. And Be'ez Hashem, we'll be back next week. Be'ez Hashem, with the help of Hashem, at the same time. In the meantime, please have a wonderful, wonderful Shabbos, you and your entire family, and a good Vach, and a successful week. And Be'ez Hashem, we'll see you again next Erev Shabbos. To each and every one of our radio family, a good Gebenchter Shabbos.